Up first, though, time to talk about the NFL draft. It gets underway tomorrow. The Patriots, at least as of right now, with the number 3 overall pick. What will they do? Where will they go? Well, we turn to Christopher Price of the Boston Globe to try and learn some of that. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rich. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Are you rested and refreshed for the draft?
I am. It really is a 3-day grind because you get Thursday night and it's in prime time. And I understand that, you know, everyone's all jacked up for prime time and that's fun and there's all sorts of fireworks. The tough turnaround is from Friday night to Saturday morning because you're often up late on Friday night writing. And then you got to turn right back around Saturday afternoon. So the key is lots of coffee. You have to feed yourself, and you have to make sure that you're prepared. You do your homework ahead of time. And hopefully I'm going to check all those boxes heading into Thursday night.
Hey, by the way, I wanted to let you know I had took a little day off last week and had a long weekend. And to get myself ready and in the right mood for the NHL playoffs, I went back and read Bleeding Green again. And it was just reminded what a terrific book that is.
I appreciate that, Rich. Thank you so much. It's interesting. I've talked to some people out in Arizona with the pending move of the Coyotes, and they are going through the same series of emotions because, you know, obviously they're seeing their team taken away from them and moved that a lot of people in Hartford are going through. So we're seeing lots of similar emotions, similar feelings that Hartford hockey fans, Connecticut hockey fans had about 25 or so years ago, 30 years ago, when you're talking about what's going on in Arizona right now.
All right, as far as the draft goes, to paraphrase Bill Parcells, who's actually buying the groceries this weekend? Is it Elliot Wolf? Is it Gerard Mayo? Is it Bob Kraft? Is it Jonathan Kraft? Who's in charge of this operation?
Well, I'll say this, Rich. I've talked to Elliot Wolf a handful of times now since he was first hired, and I have asked him multiple times, who is making the call at number 3? And every single time he said, look, ultimately it's my decision. You know, there's going to be some collaboration. He did kind of leave some wiggle room there when, you know, the last time we had the press conference, he said, look, if I like someone and everyone else in the room likes someone else, well, we're going to have a discussion about that. So it's my understanding, at least as we sit here, what's been told to me is that Elliot Wolf is going to have final say on who goes number 3. I will say this. That comes with the understanding that every time, not every time, but most times you see teams pick in the top 3, top 5, ownership has some sort of role in the decision. They don't, you know, they're ultimately not the ones to, you know, give a thumbs up or a thumbs down, but they're at the very least part of the conversation. The question here is, how much is Jonathan Kraft, according to reports, how much is Jonathan Kraft part of that conversation? So we'll see moving forward. But again, right now, I've been told that it's Elliot's pick. He's the guy who is ultimately making the decision at number 3.
So is everybody at least on the same page when it comes to feeling like the number one priority is to get a quarterback?
Yeah. Yeah. At least at this point, and at least publicly, you know, I the only way they don't go quarterback at number 3 is if they decide to entertain a trade down offer, particularly from a team like, let's say, Minnesota, and they take Minnesota's 11-23 and maybe some other options, a player, a draft pick, whatever the case may be, and they end up trading down and they end up going for a quarterback in the middle to late stages of the first round. But I think, honestly, we're all overthinking it here. They're going to stay put at number 3. They're going to take a quarterback. It's either going to be Jaden Daniels or Drake May. We're all going to move on from there.
Who do you think would be, if it is a quarterback, is it Daniels? Is it May? Is it J.J. McCarthy? Who would be the best fit for this team going forward?
I'm team Jaden at this point, Rich. And part of that is, look, my own bias, because I got a chance to go to his pro day and see him throw and talk to him one-on-one for, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes and just kind of get a feel for what kind of guy he is. I think he's a home run pick. I think he is the guy with the best feeling that's not named Caleb Williams. The quarterback is not named Caleb Williams in this draft. I think he is the kind of guy who is explosive, who's dynamic, who's an incredible playmaker, who I think has the potential to do great things for this team. That being said, I also, you know, Drake May is good. And I've told people this throughout the process, ever since I saw Jaden Daniels at his pro day. I like Drake May. I love Jaden Daniels.
We're talking with Christopher Price of the Boston Globe here on Downtown. What team is most likely to upset everybody's pre-draft projections here? Who's likely to come in and pull a surprise?
That's a great question. I'll say this. I don't think it's anyone in the top three. I know that there's been some conversation, obviously, as we alluded to there, between the Patriots and the Vikings. I know that the Vikings really like Drake May, and there is that connection because Josh McCown was, I think, Drake May's high school. There's some sort of past connection there between Drake May and Josh McCown, and I can't remember it off the top of my head. But I think there, you know, that could be the team that could come in and upset the apple cart. I think that, for me, J.J. McCarthy is the wild card in all of this. And I think part of the hype, the pre-draft hype around him, is a bit artificial and a bit blown up a little bit by, you know, whether it's his own former college coach pumping his tires or, you know, him campaigning, you know, as part of the pre-draft process, whatever the case may be. And I think if there are teams out there that might fall in love with him, I think Minnesota and J.J. McCarthy would be a pretty good mix. And I think if the Vikings think that they need to trade up into the top five, they could be the team, ultimately, that kind of shakes things up a little bit at the top of the draft as a result.
What do you think happens with a guy like Michael Penix? Is he a top 10 pick?
He's a fascinating prospect, Rich, and I'm glad you asked about him too, because I can't seem to shake the Michael Penix conversation, at least as it stands right now, because I had a chance to talk to guys who played with him, who coached him, who were on the sidelines with him, and I've used this phrase a couple of times already, and I firmly believe it to be true after talking to them. He did not have teammates this year. He had apostles. The way people looked at him, the way people talked about him, the way people raved about his leadership skills was fascinating to me. And I really dislike leaning so heavily into the intangibles aspect of the scouting report, especially when you're talking about making the transition from college to the pros. However, people talk about it so much with Penix that you have to consider it in the way that people discuss him. And look, I know that there's all sorts of issues about his health, in his knees and his shoulders and his age and all of that. I understand that's part of the conversation, and you have to take that into account when you're trying to project him at the next level. But the intangibles, the leadership skills, the charisma, his presence as a leader in the locker room, around the team, I think that's a fascinating aspect of who he is, and I think that's all going to come into play Thursday night.
What do you think of those people who suggest, hey, the recent track record of quarterbacks going in the first round is shaky at best? Maybe a surer thing would be to grab somebody like a Marvin Harrison Jr.
I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is the closest thing to a sure thing in this draft. When you talk about the non-quarterbacks, that Marvin Harrison is going to be a guy who, if he stays healthy, is going to come to the league and he's going to have 10 years of 1,000 yards no matter who's throwing him the football. He reminds me a little bit in that regard of Larry Fitzgerald, in that didn't matter where he went, didn't matter who he played for, he's just going to put up phenomenal numbers across the board. You know, the college resume, the pedigree, all of that. I think it all figures into it. That being said, this is a quarterback-rich draft. This is an extraordinarily quarterback-rich draft, at least on the surface. You not only have a guy who I think is the closest thing to Patrick Mahomes since Patrick Mahomes and Caleb Williams, you have a couple of really intriguing prospects in Jaden Daniels and Drake May. You have a guy who, like we said before, is a bit of a wild card, J.J. McCarthy. And I think if this was a different year, we would be talking more about, you know, someone like Bo Nix, I think is good at a lot of stuff, but not great at one particular thing, which I think should make him a top 35 or 40 pick at the very least. So you could look at guys like Marvin Harrison Jr. I think Joe Alt is another terrific prospect.
Yeah.
I think Malik Nabers, I think Brian Thomas, all of these guys are great prospects, but they're kind of getting overlooked a little bit because this draft is so quarterback-centric. And I think, you know, we're going to see it on Thursday night, but I think 3, 4, 5 years down the road, I think a lot of these guys, these non-quarterbacks, are going to be, you know, end up with long, successful Pro Bowl careers.
How important to the future success of whoever it is, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, how important is it to have somebody like Jacoby Brissett around this coming season?
Oh, it's huge. It really is huge. Not just to have Jacoby Brissett himself, but I think every young quarterback is helped by having a Jacoby Brissett type on the roster. Now, whether that's Jacoby Brissett, I'm just naming guys here. Brissett, you know, I know Brian Hoyer was a lot like that when he was here. Just individuals who can take you to the side and act like a, you know, an assistant quarterbacks coach or an assistant offensive coordinator. They just teach you how to perform in the league. I think Brissett in particular is tremendous because he's played in a lot of systems. He's been around. He is one of the most well-respected guys in the league. He's cost-effective. He's a dream to have in your locker room when you're going out to get a young quarterback. He's also secure enough at this stage of his career where he knows, look, you know, he's not the end game. You know, he's not going to be the starting quarterback on a Super Bowl winning team anymore. So he is going to be the guy who is going to shepherd the guy to the next level. He's a little bit, you know, let's use some baseball terminology here since it's April, okay? He's Crash Davis. He's fundamentally going to be Crash Davis to Drake May or Jaden Daniels' version of Nuke LaLoosh. He's the guy who kind of, you know, shepherds him through to, you know, to get him to where he needs to be.
Well, I hope they have an Annie around to help him out in the cause as well. Quarterback is a great start, but one player is not going to right the ship here for the Patriots. So once that's done, where do they turn their attention to with their next pick?
They need to build depth both at wide receiver and at the offensive tackle position. I could see them going after one of those late first-round types at wide receiver, you know, a Ladd McConkey type. I think they need a little bit more size than a guy like Ladd McConkey, but there are a lot of really good second- and third-day possibilities that they can consider a wide receiver. Guys like Tez Walker out of North Carolina, I'm a big proponent of if you go after a guy like Drake May, get one of his college teammates, particularly one of his wide receivers at North Carolina, a guy like Tez Walker, who put up really good numbers for the Tar Heels, is a big target, I think he's 6'2", 215. He's the type of guy who I think could make an impact in the short term. Bub Means, a wide receiver in college who was coached by Tyquan Underwood for a couple of years before Tyquan came to New England, so there's a level of familiarity there. I think either one of those guys as a day two or a day three pick would make a lot of sense for the Patriots. Then I'll give you a name. You would know this guy that I think would be a fantastic day three pick or an undrafted free agent. Dylan Lobby.
Oh, love out of University of New Hampshire. Yeah. The Swiss Army knife. He can do it all.
I love that kid. Look, and I joked with him at the combine. I said, look, if this was 10 years ago, Bill Belichick would have staked out his front lawn at this point, you know, because he was a Belichick type of player. He is a Belichick type of player. A little bit like I always describe him as kind of a bit of a bigger version of Danny Woodhead, guy who can catch passes out of the backfield, contribute on special teams. I know that, you know, he got that small school bias working against him, but I love him as a day three possibility. He can do a little bit of everything, like you mentioned. I think he would be a great fit for this Patriots team as a day three pick.
Oh, I love that idea right there. Well, along those same lines, will you miss it if there isn't one of those Belichickian type picks where all the draft experts are going to their laptop saying, who is this guy? What school did he play for?
A left-footed punter at a Navy. One of those guys. Exactly, man. I will miss that aspect.
Where is Lenore Ryan? I haven't heard of that before.
Exactly. You know, you take a teenage rugby star like Nate Ebner and turn him into a special team stud in New England. So I think that, you know, that I will miss that aspect of it. The idea that there are these uniquely Bill Belichick type of players. I do a podcast with Chris Hogan, and we talked about it this week where, you know, we want one of those guys, you know, a lacrosse player from Navy to be, or, you know, someone like that. We want a Belichick type of draft pick somewhere in this year's draft, just for nostalgia's sake more than anything else.
And then post-draft, as they continue the rebuild of this team, is there much left out there in the free agent pool?
There are a few names. Both myself and Hogan, you know, we kind of have made a weekly joke of trying to speak Stephon Gilmore's return into existence. He's still out there. He's probably one of the biggest names. And I think he would be a great fit to bring some stability to a cornerback room that wasn't all that stable last year because of health and other reasons. But you know, it's basically kind of finding complementary pieces post-draft. And that includes, you know, the undrafted guys, the street free agents, plus the guys who are still out there, like Stephon Gilmore. So there are a handful of guys, you know, as we know from experiences with players like Rob Ninkovich, team building is a year-round experience. You know, Ninkovich, I remember, signed in August of 2009. And so you don't think that your roster is set at any point, even post-draft, post-free agency. You're always out there doing some tinkering, looking for the next great piece.
Well, we're looking forward to tomorrow and the weekend. It should be a lot of fun and very interesting to see what the process is like without Bill Belichick around. Christopher Price of the Boston Globe, always great talking with you, Chris. Thanks so much for sharing your insight at this busy time, and have a great weekend.
My pleasure, Rich. Take care, and we'll talk soon.
You got it.